Good morning. I'm calling the House Finance Committee to order. We're going to get the show on the road. I know where everybody's going to try to get home and beat the storm tonight, so I hope everybody is safe when they drive. Our first order of business is to adopt the minutes for February 16th. Representative Pryor, have you had a chance to look at the minutes for February 16th?
Yes, I have, and so moved.
Thank you, Representative Chair. I believe we just have an L missing and a comma, so we're going to do the technical corrections on the minutes. Is there any other questions on the minutes for February 16th? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes for February 16th with the two technical corrections, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes for February 16th are adopted. Members, our first order of business is House File 112, which is Representative Pryor's bill. We'll let her get settled. 112 moved from education policy to the floor, but the Senate flagged a very, very, very small fiscal note that Representative Pryor's going to chat about that we are going to then talk about and move to the floor. So with that, Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 112 before the committee with the intention of re-referring the bill to the Committee on Ways and Means?
Yes, that is my motion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Sorry, I was skipping a step there. So, Representative Pryor, go ahead, and now that the bill's in front of us, proceed.
All right. So this was heard in education policy, and it's a bill to delay the fiscal education standards. This was, when they were introduced, they were put on a five-year schedule instead of the usual 10-year schedule, with a disruption in school that we've had in the previous years. Many schools across the state right now have not been able to adopt and use these standards now. Not that they don't want to, it's just that they have not had the opportunity. So we're starting to implement these new physical education standards. And what they would like is, before reviewing them to see if they're good or not, to actually just delay, use them for a while, and then start giving feedback. So it's to delay from the 5 years to the 10 years. We did have an inquiry about whether or not there was a savings for the Department of MTE, and actually, if it's all right, to address that part and, again, to review what I just said about delaying these standards, I would like to turn to my testifier from the Department of Education.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Before we do that, maybe we'll just have Ms. Beckel go over how it might look like a savings in 24, but it's being spent in 27. So, and then we'll go to Mr. Uno.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. If you look at the fiscal note that is included in your packet, you'll note that on the front page, it shows a savings of $40,000 in fiscal year 23 because they're postponing the standards review and not doing that in fiscal year 23. They're just saving that $40,000. And then you see the cost pushed to fiscal year 27. If you read further, the fiscal note just explains that a bit further. And that's the fiscal note, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. With that, Mr. Uni, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And I'll just keep my comments briefly to the cost projections and cost and saving projections in the fiscal note to support this delay of the physical education standards to allow for adequate implementation of the current standards and to avoid confusion and delay in the field around having a simultaneous review and revision process, while also the expectation of implementing the current standards. So as it pertains to the savings in 23 and the costs in 27 that Ms. Beckel gave an overview of in the fiscal note, agencies often absorb costs of legislation without the legislature providing specific funding. But what's in the fiscal note, it stands that the agency could be allowed to absorb savings, particularly when the amount is so small. $40,000 represents less than 0.2% of MDE's operating budget. In this case, it's, my argument that it's not entirely even a savings. since we know that the cost will come later on, as Ms. Beckel pointed out, in fiscal 27, and we will absorb the cost at that point, or the work at this point. And as it pertains to our position that it's no cost, as we stated, we wouldn't let a portion of an FTE go because of a delay, and we wouldn't hire a portion of an FTE to do the work when it comes out. This is the work being done by our physical education specialists. The fiscal note is a reflection of the value of the work, which is a different perspective than the cost of impact to the agency. And, you know, we do recognize the value of the fiscal notes, but this analysis is it doesn't fully encompass the work that is done at the agency. This individual will continue to do the work of implementing the current standards that we have. So there's going to be work that this individual is going to be doing in the current term, and then the work will come up again in fiscal 27. And I will note that there is no line item that the department gets for review, revision, and implementation of standards work. So we believe that this is the savings and cost generator is something that we can take on and absorb over the course of that work.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Members, are there any questions on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Pryor, final word.
Thank you for the hearing and walking through the fiscal impact and absorbing that cost, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. With that, members, we're going to go to a vote. Representative Pryor moves again that House File 112 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. House 112 is on its way. Next up, members, we are going to move into the wonderful world of equalization and levies. So before we go into that, I'm going to have Mr. Strom from House Research give us a brief overview of school equalization. Earlier this session, we did have an informational hearings kind of covered this topic already, but I figured with the three bills in front of us that we might want a refresher. So there is a handout in your packets, and Mr. Strom, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, there's a one-page handout in your package labeled School District Equalization right under the agenda for today. What we're going to spend our time in, hopefully less than 5 minutes or thereabouts, is talking about equalization. Equalization in the school finance world generally refers to tax-based equalization. The theory is essentially that school districts don't control what happens for development in their districts, and as a result, the tax base of their district isn't something under the school district's control. The measure that we use for tax base in Minnesota, unfortunately, we use two different tax bases. The example I'm going to use today focuses on the one we refer to as the referendum market value tax base. And referendum market value, if you just think of the assessed value of all the property in the state, within each school district, add up that assessed value. So if you have a $1 million business and $100,000 apartment and a $200,000 home, add those all up all across the district. That's the referendum market value of the district with two classes of property removed. Ag lands are removed from that definition, and the cabins or seasonal rec property are removed. So when we refer to referendum market value tax base, that's tax base without those two categories of property, but otherwise it's the assessed value of those properties all added together. The measure for the school finance world is really a ratio. It's tax base per pupil. And the idea behind that is that it will provide a mechanism to help level the playing field among school districts that have varying levels of tax base per pupil. So what I've done is at the bottom of the single page handout is put together a little example for three randomly selected school districts, the Hopkins School District, the Northfield District, and the Austin School District. Just to give a little sense, they conveniently are kind of a high tax based district, a medium tax based district, and a low tax based district to give an example of what equalization does and how it works. And the goal of equalization, as I mentioned, is really to provide a more level tax impact across different kinds of tax bases in a district. One last thing I want to mention, we often refer to a district with a large tax base as a tax base wealthy district and a district with a low tax base as a tax base poor district. Those terms really only modify the tax base, though they're not talking about the characteristics of the families that live in those districts. So some districts, like the Hopkins School District, is really a fairly modest community, but its tax base is really quite large. Other districts may have very wealthy people that live in them, but may have a smaller tax base, and we wouldn't necessarily consider them tax base wealthy. So for the equalization example, if you look at the table, we're starting with a guesstimate of the pupil counts for the three districts. Then listing the tax base, you can see Hopkins's tax base is about $14 billion, all the market value in that district. Northfield's about $3 billion, and Austin about $2 billion. And when you divide those by the pupil count in each district, that's our measure, that's our metric we're going to use for tax base equalization. In Hopkins, that's $2.1 million, in Northfield about $825,000. And in Austin, about 393,000. And Northfield's kind of an average district, so you can see that Hopkins and Austin bookend that at relatively extreme amounts on either end. For equalization, the general mechanism we use in Minnesota is the legislature puts an equalizing factor in statute. 880,000 is an example that's in statute for the first tier of the referendum program, and so that's the amount I'm using in this example. If you took an allowance, some dollars per pupil, $724, which lines up with the local optional revenue amount, you can see that the revenue is the same per pupil but differs depending on the number of pupils in the district. So Hopkins, the largest district, has $5 million of revenue, Northfield 2.9, and Austin 3.9. If you were to tell districts, go ahead and levy this on your taxpayers, and you go to the bottom line, the tax without any equalization, a $300,000 home in Hopkins would pay $102 for that $724 per pupil. In Northfield, the owner of a $300,000 home would pay $263 without any equalization. And in Austin, that same tax burden on a $300,000 home would be $551. So without equalization, that tax base matters a lot. And as I said, one of the principles of school finance is to provide equalization to moderate the effects of property tax base. With an equalizing factor set in statute at $880,000, you can see then that the levy drops in Northfield because about 6% of the total amount, when we make the ratio of their tax base per pupil to the equalizing factor, $825,000 over $880,000, that's about 94% levy and 6% state aid. In Austin, the $393,000 over the $880,000 means the levy is less than half of the total. 55% of their revenue would come from the local levy in this, or from the aid, and 45% from the levy. So if you look to the second to bottom line, then you can see that with equalization, there's no benefit to the Hopkins district. They get zero state aid, but that's because their tax base is well above the equalizing factor. And you can see that on a tax on a $300,000 home, the impact for $724 would be $102. With equalization at $880,000 for Northfield, their tax on a $300,000 home drops a bit, drops by about 6% to $247. And for the Austin School District, the tax drops by more than half on a $300,000 home to $247 instead of the $551 it would be without equalization. So what equalization essentially does is it tries to provide tax base equality across districts. The higher those equalizing factors, the more districts are going to qualify, and the less of a differential there'll be in tax between the districts that have the largest tax base per pupil and those with the smallest. So, Madam Chair, that's a very quick overview of equalization.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And just a reminder, too, that in this scenario, for example, Hopkins, That's the entire Hopkins School District. The city of Hopkins proper is only about 20% of the school district and actually has a much lower tax base than all the surrounding communities do. We're the poor cousin in that whole scenario. So when we talk about this, it's not just the city, it's the entire school district and all the surrounding communities that are within that school district. And then members too, these bills will hear here and we'll be here. We're going to be moving them on to the tax committee so they can take a look, but they're still our primary jurisdiction. We don't have to move them back to include them in whatever we do. And then they'll hopefully be equalization target that's different than our base target that we get for education. So with that, members, I want to make sure to see if people have any questions for Mr. Strom before we move on equalization. Seeing none, we'll move on to our first bill of the day, and that is our second bill of the day, House File 1396. And Ms. Representative Hemmingsworth Yeager, welcome to the Education Finance Committee for such a scintillating conversation. And Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 1396 before the committee with the intention to re-refer it to the Tax Committee?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. With that, Representative Hemmingsworth Yeager, we have your bill before us. Proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm Representative Amanda Hemmingson Yeager. Thank you for having me today, Chair and members, to talk about the very exciting topic of debt service equalization aid. This bill 1396 aims to decrease the threshold they were discussing to 10%, as well as increase equalization factor for all debt to 55% of the state average. In a nutshell, currently about 30 school districts qualify for this type of aid, and under this bill, we would have over 100 school districts qualify. And so I will kind of leave it at that and turn it over to testifiers.
Thank you. I think first up we have, the one testifier we have is Dan Page, business manager from business manager from Intermediate School District 833. Please state your name for the record, considering I totally butchered it, and proceed.
Sorry about that. It wasn't the agenda. I thought it was farther down. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Payan, and I serve as the Executive Director for Finance and Operations for South Washington County Schools. We're a district with about 19,000 students, located in the southeast metro, east of 494 and north of the Mississippi River. Of course, I'm here in support of House File 1396, which would increase the equalization aid for debt service obligations. The bill will reduce property taxes by about $40 million statewide and help out taxpayers and school districts with low property wealth, such as South Washington County Schools. Districts with low property wealth place a larger burden on residential homeowners, often meaning that it takes more dollars from residential homes, as you just heard, to raise construction dollars as opposed to those districts with larger commercial tax bases. For example, our district went out for a $463 million bond last August. The cost to a taxpayer with about a $300,000 house on the tax impact was about $25 per month. Bear in mind, we have five schools right now that are over 105% of capacity and another five to hit those marks in five to 10 years. So we're trying to plan for the future, or plan for now and the future. That $25 a month was too much of a burden, as I'll get to a little bit later, for our taxpayers. The neighboring district is asking for building bonds of about $493 million this spring total, about $30 million more than we've asked for, at a tax cost of about $1,850 per average home. So right there you can see another district can raise more money for less burden on their taxpayers. After our bond failed, we commissioned a survey by the Leatherman Company, And the biggest concern in our district is high taxes. And the conclusion from the survey was our taxpayers would tolerate about $10 per month. And that's understandable in these times on the average home. You can see that we have to reduce our projects by over half, and projects will just get kicked down the road. The point of this story is that any relief we can provide the taxpayers that will equalize across the state the resources available to school districts is much welcome and needed. And you've probably heard many times, the zip code of a student should not determine the opportunities which lay before him.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Payne. Members, are there any questions for the testifiers? This scenario that you described is one of the reasons why these bills do go to taxes, and I forgot to mention that our entire education finance bill, because of equalization, will have to move through taxes as well. The reason why we send these bills separately is so they have a chance to discuss it a little further so that when our whole bill goes there, it goes much quicker. But basically, any money we put in equalization is a direct property tax cut to property owners in the district. It's not necessarily going into our schools. So that's just a distinction I wanted folks to kind of keep in their mind. But is there any questions for Mr. Payen or on the bills? I am seeing none. Ms. Hemmingsworth-Yeager, Representative Pryor.
I'll just make a quick comment. It's the clarity with which you explain things is why we're not asking any questions. So appreciate your clarity and brevity.
Representative Hemmingsworth-Yeager, final comments.
I just want to say thanks again for your attention and consideration. This is a bipartisan bill, so very excited for that. Representative Hudella and I share a school district, South Washington County, so thank you, Mr. Payen, for coming and speaking with them. You know, South Washington County for sure is a growing school district, and we really need to be able to make sure our kids are getting the education that they need and they deserve while keeping in mind our taxpayers. So I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, members, we'll go to a vote. We have House File, renew Representative Pryor's motion to re-refer House File 1396 to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. With that, House File 1396 has re-referred to the Tax Committee. And I am going to now hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Clardy to go over the next two bills. And hopefully you're all as kind to me as you were to Representative Hemmingsworth-Yeager. Why I brought my coffee, but I did. Madam Vice Chair, would you mind if I had the testifiers just come up right away so we can...
That's fine. Thank you. So our next agenda item is House File 879. Chair Joachim, would you like to move House 879 before the committee with the intention for it to be referred to the taxes or the Committee on Taxes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 879 with the intention to re-refer to the Tax Committee.
Great. And I see you have an A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Would you like me to briefly describe the A2 amendment?
Yes, but could you move the motion, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the A2 amendment before the committee.
Wonderful. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. And I have my folders backwards, but I have the A2 amendment in the wrong folder. Here we go. So the A2 amendment increases the maximum funding for the local operation levy from the current basis of $724 per pupil to $840 per pupil. It also increases the equalizing factor so that there's no statewide levy impact with that increase being provided for in state aid.
Great. Are there any questions on the A2 amendment? Okay, seeing none, Chair Joachim renews her motion to adopt the A2 amendment. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Joachim, you may present your bill as amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'd like to thank Mr. Strom for walking through the basics of operating levies and equalization. As I always try to explain it to people is for property wealthy districts, when they ask a dollar from their residents, sometimes that resident only has to pay 50 cents. In property poor districts, when they ask a dollar from their residents for their levies, their resident has to pay $1.50. And equalization helps us property poor level the playing field for the property poor districts. So that's kind of where we're at today. Members, there are runs in your packets that show this amendment, what it would mean for your district. I don't know if Mr. Strom would like to briefly look through the runs just to remind us what the headers are on that.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, in your packet for House File 879 is a printout that's oriented on legal paper and is in landscape portrait. This shows the equalization and additional revenue that would come through the local optional revenue program. The concept of equalization remains the same. You can see the effect that increasing the equalizing factor has to essentially hold the levy constant under this program. The printouts laid out like other ones we've seen in this committee with the strata at the top. The per pupil listed, and then essentially working across the page to see both the revenue change and the levy change. And in the second and fourth to last columns, you can see how the property tax levy would be changing for the additional revenue and the additional equalization provided in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Chair Joachim, did you want to proceed?
Thank you. With that, members, I would like to touch on a few ways that the function of local operating levy that was originally called the local equity revenue has changed over the last decade, just to give you some grounding. In 2013, school boards were given the authority to convert up to $300 per pupil of voter-approved referendum to school board-approved referendum, and $424 per pupil of voter-approved referendum to local equity revenue. The $300, that first $300, was equalized at a very high level. Districts that had $724 or more in referendum authority did not receive any new revenue from this change, but it provided more stability in funding by relying less on voter referendum revenue and more on aid. And the increase in equalization property tax relief, in particularly to poor property districts. Finally, the referendum cap was tied to a formula allowance so that it would increase as the formula increased. In 2014, the local equity revenue was changed to what we know now as the local operation revenue, and all districts were made eligible for $424 per pupil in local optional revenue, so they kind of mushed the two together. And in 2019, that original $300 of board-approved referendum revenue was moved to local optional revenue too, and that two-tier equalization that we have right now was created. The first tier of that local operating revenue, that $300 per pupil, is equalized at a flat $880,000, as you saw on Mr. Strom's sheet that he talked about, per pupil of the referendum market value. And the second tier, that $424 per pupil, was equalized at a lower value, $510,000. So while there's been some structural changes over the last decade, what is known as local operational levy revenue has been frozen at that $724 per pupil since 2013. And the value of that amount has lost ground over time. 879 is amended, would increase that local operational revenue from that $724 to $840 per people to recapture some of that ground loss due to inflation. And the entire amount would be equalized at the first tier. So we talked about that first tier being equalized at a larger number. The amendment also has the bill take effect for fiscal year 2025 to decrease some of the costs. And Mr. Strom, could you please also We went through the runs. I had my notes mixed up. Gary did that. Once again, I'm just going to turn this over to my testifiers so we stop talking about numbers and start talking about how this practically looks in our school districts.
The first testifier is Paul Bourgeois. I don't know how to pronounce your last name, so please correct me.
Oh, thank you.
State your name for the record, please.
Paul Bourgeois. I'm Executive Director of Finance and Operations for Minnetonka Public Schools. I'm here testifying on behalf of AMSD and also MASBO. This local optional revenue is extremely valuable to every school district in the state. We have used it for every level of educational program that you can imagine. When it came into existence, the districts that could access the full $724, it was a real lifeline for them and for all of us. The if you look on the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they have an inflation calculator. And if you plug in $724 in January or July of 2014 when this money first became available, and you plug in January of 2023, the inflation number you get back is $909. In other words, the $724 has lost about $185 in purchasing power. We are only asking to have about two-thirds of that purchasing power restored and then be indexed to inflation going forward. The other piece of this equalization factor is it's really important. There are a handful of districts that do not access the $724, and this might make it possible for them. I guess to just summarize my short comments, if this is approved, it'll be greatly received. I mean, up in Ely and Thief River Falls, Granite Falls, Worthington, Caledonia to Winona, and here in the Twin Cities, everybody will really make good use of this money. We really would appreciate the additional $116 if possible. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bourgeois. Our next testifier is Anne-Marie Foucault. Could you please pronounce your name for the record?
Yes, Foucault.
Foucault. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anne-Marie Foucault, and I'm superintendent of St. Michael Albertville Public Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. Over the past couple of budget cycles, my district has experienced significant budget shortfalls. Our shortfalls are not the result of poor budget planning or even the pandemic. Our budget challenges are due to the state funding not keeping pace with inflation and our students not qualifying for much categorical aid, factors largely outside of our control. Recently, we cut $7.3 million and 77 staff members. Our class sizes are very high, approaching 30 in kindergarten in grade 1, 42 in grade 5, and the low 40s in core classes at our high school. We've also expanded our walk zone, which means we have 5 and 6-year-olds walking a mile to and from school, drastically reduced our high potential programming, doubled our high school activity fees, and more. This has taken a toll on our staff as we have seen many high quality staff members leave due to having to do much more with much less. This includes 53 teachers who left just last year. To make matters worse, our school board is grappling with another $2.7 million deficit, which means additional staff cuts of 30 to 35 for next year. Needless to say, this bill would provide financial relief and would stabilize funding for my district and all Minnesota districts. It would increase funding by $116 per pupil, which would help recoup lost ground due to inflationary losses over the past decade. For my district, it would mean an additional $845,000 per year, which is the equivalent of 11.3 teachers. It would help reduce class sizes and provide some relief for our students and our staff members. In addition, the increase in equalization aid in the bill would be tax neutral for many districts and actually lower taxes for taxpayers in my district. You see, my district is property poor, as we do not have a lot of commercial and industrial development, so the tax burden on our taxpayers is significant. With two recent failed operating levies, passage of this bill would help us should our school board decide on a future ask. In closing, I am here today asking for your careful consideration and support of this important bill. Thank you for listening and supporting students across our great state.
Thank you for your testimony and your dedication. Are there any questions for Chair Joachim or testifiers? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess I have a couple parts to this question, and mostly it's just clarification so that I do understand this particular bill that's before us right now and how it works for our school districts. So the first part of the question to address to the bill author, who I know knows the answer because she understands this, is that so when we're the school districts that do benefit from this, it would be unrestricted to the ways that they could use this money. So that is the first part of the clarification. And then the other part is that every single school district would see a benefit from if we passed this bill and funded it at the level that's suggested, or some school district, this is, you know, just like many of the things that we do affect some districts but not all districts. And so that is the second part where I want to make sure that I understand.
I actually will kick that to Mr. Strom. As I'm looking through the runs, there are a few that don't benefit from this because they may, I'm assuming, but I'll have to ask Mr. Strom, they may have already hit their levy cap or they don't take advantage of that full $724. But Mr. Strom, are there some folks that will not benefit from this?
Madam Chair, representatives, in answer to the second question first, as the business manager from Minnetonka pointed out, some school districts don't go all the way to the $724. They stop at the $300 per pupil because of the tax implications of going higher. It's always a question for modeling to know whether the equalization in this bill is high enough to consider a behavioral change or not. So for purposes of the printout, if the district was at the $300 or above, they get the full amount of the increase shown on the printout. If they were below $300, the assumption I made when modeling this was that the higher equalization would not be sufficient to make them higher. That's guesswork on my part. All districts have access to the additional revenue, and you'll see as you look up and down the list, some by the assumption I've made, some would be accessing more than $500 per pupil, while the average district is accessing $116 per pupil. In answer to the first part of the question, as the superintendent from St. Michael Albertville pointed out, the tax reductions are significant for those on the equalization, so that even though there's revenue gain for a district like St. Michael Albertville, there's also tax relief in there because the enhanced equalization helps equalize the tax base for a low tax base district like St. Michael Albertville. So you have both effects going on in the bill depending on the district. Districts with large tax base per pupil are going to see their tax go up slightly, but they'll still be paying quite a bit less than those in low property tax wealth districts who may see their taxes go down even with the new revenue. Apologies for the long answer, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Chair Joachim?
Yes, and to add to what Mr. Strom said too, is he's saying all school districts have the ability to access that full $724. As a reminder, this is a school board approved levy referendum. So they can access these funds. That's just a decision made by the school board. This is not the levy that goes out to the voters.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to ask this question, and it may make no sense because I'm trying to make sense of all these different figures and things, but here's what I'm trying to get at. So linking this local optional revenue to this, how we're linking this, is going to, are we also linking the equalization factor to increase as well, because otherwise wouldn't that add an automatic property tax increase? Am I making any sense or not?
Chair Joachim?
Actually, so it's already linked to an equalizing factor that's been flat, and okay. It hasn't been moved since 2013 as values have been going up. And when you are moving that from $724 per pupil to $840, that may increase property taxes depending on whether or not that district accesses it, but maybe I'll also go to Mr. Strom for clarification.
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, yes, you are correct. It's a higher level, but a flat level of equalization that it's going up to. So as tax base grows over time, the rate may actually fall, but the levy dollars itself will increase, and the state aid will go down if it's not linked to growth in the tax base as well. That's a conversation this committee has had on a number of the equalized levies about whether they should be linked to growth in tax base or just have a flat equalizing factor like the amount that's currently in the bill that's being increased to another flat level.
Chair Youakim? I'm sorry, Chair Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that. That does explain it. I'm not saying that equalization should increase automatically either, but I'm just trying to get a handle on all this and how it will affect both now, but then in the future. It's very interesting and complicated.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Bennett, trust me, I had to have Mr. Strom explain it like three different times and other people too. So with this, we're taking away that flat linkage so that things grow, because as I said before, this hasn't been touched for a while. So we all know what property values have been doing. So it would automatically increase to the, well, not automatically, it'll ride with that market value increase. But we also know that markets dip and move. So while it may be, it's still going to be providing some stability instead of having that flat equalization factor and falling behind, they'll be able to keep up with what's going on in their districts. The more important part, too, is just the fact that it really will, because we're increasing the equalizing factor, it really will help cut property taxes. So that's the part of it, too. We just have a few moving levers happening at the same time. So a rather comprehensive look at how to kind of right-size the ship.
Are there any other further questions? Okay, seeing none, Chair Youakim, did you want to present any final words on your bill?
Yes, I want to thank folks for asking questions and trying to dig deep into this. It is, like Representative Bennett said, and I heartily concur, it's a very complicated complicated bill and complicated way the formula's working and how it interacts with property taxes. That's why I so appreciate our nonpartisan staff that can explain it. And why we had the overview to start with. But members, 879 really is a way that we can make our school's revenue stream a little bit more stable and predictable. We will be looking at different ways to do this with other bills, including House File 1271, as well as indexing the formula to inflation. But when we're looking at equalizing, like I said before, I really want you to keep in the back of the mind that actually means property tax cuts. That's why it has to go to taxes. When we equalize the formula and pay a district more aid versus what they're having to go to the taxpayers for, it really does provide some of that relief. And members, I would ask for a yes vote so that we can move this bill to taxes so they can dig even deeper, and it will continue our discussions.
Okay, with that, Chair Youakim renews her motion for House File 879 as amendment to be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. House File 879, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Taxes. So our next agenda item is House File 1271, also Chair Youakim. Would you like to move House File 1271 before the committee with the intention of it being re-referred to the Committee on Taxes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move 1271 before the committee today with the intention of re-referring this to the Tax Committee.
You may present your bill. You may present your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the hearing on 1271 today. This is yet another bill that deals with school districts' local operating levy and equalization. With this bill in 1994, an equalizing factor was put in place for that first tier on all local equity revenue. The first tier equalizing factor has only been raised twice since, from $476,000 to $510,000 in 2013. Then it was increased to $567,000 in 2019. That equates to just under a 20% increase from the statewide average for a referendum market value per people unit has grown over 300% for that same time period. Referendum equalization aid as a portion of the referendum peaked at about 35% from 2001 to 2002 school year, and the percentage is estimated to fall to 2% in 2025. So as I said, it equates to a 20% increase over time. We've peaked at 35%. It's going to fall to 2%, while the market around us has gone up over 300% in that same time period. In other words, we need to adjust the aid to current values, allowing the equalization factor to grow with the market. In House File 1271, you'd raise the equalizing factor to 150% of the statewide average referendum market per pupil value. So we're going halfway there. We're not going to the full 300%. That would set the equalizing factor at just over $1 million. The bill would also allow the factor to grow so that when the school board goes to the voters, it is a number that is closer to what is happening in the market. Otherwise, the levy cost is shifted over to property taxes versus its state aid as property wealth grows. So members, this is a different way to approach the same problem. So in the previous bill, we were looking at bringing the tiers together and linking that equalization factor to the market value. This is still putting in, we're talking about the market value, but it's at 150% of the market value. And with that, Mr. Strom, can you once again briefly take us through the runs?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, let's see if I can make sure I hit the document in front of me here. I'm not seeing that printout in the.
House File 1271. I have it, but.
My apologies, Madam Chair. I can send that to the printer real quick. And,
maybe we missed it in the packets.
Oh, okay, very good. Madam Chair, that one will be copied and down to us soon.
Okay, no problem. I was just jumping ahead of myself, probably. So with that, maybe we could go to testifiers, Madam Chair.
Great. Our first testifier is remote, and it would be Dr. Scott Tillman, and he's the superintendent of Buffalo, Andover, and Montrose.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Education Finance Committee members. It's a privilege to be here and testify. I was asked to testify on behalf of Schools for Equity in Education. I'm the superintendent with the Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District, just to the west of the Twin Cities, and share a border with the Osseo, Anoka, Hennepin, St. Michael, Albertville, Monticello school districts, Rockford to the east, and wanted to give you a picture of what 1271, House File 1271, might do for the members of CE, which are 55 members currently, ranging in size from the Anoka-Hennepin school district to the Medford school district, and really looking at property tax equalization. The file that is presented is one that will benefit our community dramatically. $1.2 million tax relief for our community. And I want to just touch base on this for a moment. I have runs from Schools for Equity in Education just particular to the Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District, in which in 1995, as you said, it was enacted in 1994. In 1995, the BHM schools could go out to our community and say, if you raise your taxes 25 cents, the state will give us 75 cents in return in aid. And that was a big selling point for communities to be able to provide additional programming that the community saw fit for their students. In comparison, in the pay 22 school year, the Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District would ask our community, hey, if you support us and give us 92 cents, the state will give us 8 cents. So we've gone from 25% local effort and 75% state aid to 92% local effort with 8% state aid. I encourage members, if you haven't watched the famous or infamous pizza video from Schools for Equity and Education, you can watch how, and it's demonstrated how communities that have a high property value wealth, commercial industrial properties, or just properties that are higher in value, receive an unfair advantage, an equitable advantage. In Buffalo, it takes 2.5 times the effort for our local taxpayers to, in order to gain the same amount of a district like Hopkins. And I share Hopkins because that is part of our athletic conference, the Lake Conference. Hopkins, Edina, Eden Prairie, Wayzata, Minnetonka, Buffalo, St. Michael, Albertville are all part of the Lake Conference. And I'll give you another example. If all of our, if Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District was able to generate the max amount for an operating referendum, which is $2,779, our taxpayers on a $250,000 home would have to pay $1,054 versus currently a Hopkins home that's valued at $250,000 would pay $388. And so what this bill does is it takes away a static amount of $567,000 and creates a sliding scale of 150% of the operating market value, referendum market value equalization factor. Again, this would help the Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District, but it would help all the school districts in the state of Minnesota, from Anoka Hennepin to Medford, as I gave an example with the Schools for Equity in Education. So we appreciate the introduction of House File 1271 and would encourage the Education Finance Committee to pass along this bill. I will just end with one important factor. This does not give school districts additional money. This does give our community property tax relief. And so it's about tax fairness. Would this help school districts pass an operating referendum? Absolutely, I think it would. But it is about property tax fairness also. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Dr. Tillman, for your conversation. Our next testifier is Dan Pryan from South Washington County.
Madam Chair, I think we just had the one testifier for this bill.
Perfect. Okay. With that, members, we have no one signed up for public comments or questions. Are there any questions? Representative Pryor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And good opportunity to try to learn this a little bit better. So appreciate the testifiers and the ability to ask questions. And just it occurred to me as I was listening to our last testifiers about school districts, this would just, it would not change how much money the school's getting, just how easy it is to pass an operating levy. But this would be in the future, correct? Nothing retroactive that would change. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, yes, Representative Pryor, this is not retroactive. It's moving into the future. And you bring up the big important point, and so did Dr. Thielman, is that this isn't more money into our schools, this is more money back to our taxpayers' pockets. And you can kind of see a trend theme of why I decided to carry these bills, not only because I think it's really important and I sit on the tax committee and I'm starting to understand the interactions between it, but also I represent a city that, like I said, is not property wealthy, but we're in a district that is. And we don't get the equalizing factor to the same extent as a property poor district, but I think it's very important that property poor districts have the same opportunities and that equalizing factor to help them out. So that is why it is important to me to carry this bill, because we like to make sure that we're thinking way beyond what our districts can get. But it's also very important for you to be talking to your community districts, like I know you do, to make sure they see how this affects them. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised that some of these runs and all the work that Mr. Strom and folks do to give us these runs so that we can look at them and see how it will possibly affect our district. So thank you.
Representative Pryor.
And if I may ask a follow-up question again, just a clarification. And yes. If I may bring in the two bills that we've heard together, I think Representative or Chair Joachim, you said that different ways of looking at the same problem, different solutions. Do you think that, especially after property tax hears the bills, do you think that both of these are part of the solution, or could it be that or one of them probably needs to weigh in as being the solution versus the other one, or is this combination? And then also, did I understand correctly that the first one that you introduced would have an or would do something for the school district itself, or is, again, are both of these just targeted towards the taxpayer, the property tax, local property taxes?
Representative Pryor, that's a Representative Pryor, that is a very good and complicated question to answer. But I think it's going to be a blend of the two, because from my understanding, and I'm looking to my guru and Mr. Strom, these are two different ways to approach the same problem. And there's different levers we can pull. One of those levers is that moving up that $724 access to $840 like we did in the first bill. Another one is either just having it directly move with the market referendum market value. Another in this bill is having it at 150% of the referendum market value. And bottom line, though, is, like you said, this is not, neither of these are putting money back into a school district's pocket. These are putting money back into our property taxpayers' pocket.
Chair, thanks, Chair Joachim. Mr. Strom, did you have anything to add?
No, Madam Chair, in terms of Representative Pryor's comments, I would just say that one of the concerns with equalization is whether it's a tax committee issue or an education issue, both committees would prefer the other pay for it out of its targets. So part of the, I don't mean to be flip, but I mean part of the issue is how do you set the case for determining where a target might be for property tax relief and whether one of the levers may be more appealing than the other. So I suspect it's an ongoing conversation that may involve parts of all three, but also probably needs to work with what decisions on enhanced school funding this committee makes, as well as decisions the tax committee may choose to make in terms of how they're structuring property tax relief this year.
Thank you. Chair Pryor, a follow-up? Nope. Okay. Representative West? Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was actually a little worried when I saw Chair Joachim introduce this bill, because sometimes chairs introduce a bill in order to park it and have it never be seen again. So I really appreciate you moving forward on this. I'm a co-author on this bill, and it really is a bipartisan bill, not only on the co-authors, but it affects, in particular, my district, Representative Hill's district. Like this benefits people across the state, and I appreciate you as chair taking a more statewide approach, because it, as you mentioned, this is not necessarily your re-election bill for your districts. And I just want to give you props to thinking about the whole state, not parking this bill to suffer a very silent death. And I hope to see this move forward, because this is, if we're ever going to do it, now is the time with our absolutely enormous surplus. And this is a way everyone can be a winner and fix some problems that have been here for a very long time. So I just want to say that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Any final words, Chair Joachim?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. So yes, I am very interested in trying to tackle this in some way, shape, or form this year. And as Mr. Strom said, who pays for it is the crux of the issue and why we're trying to lay the groundwork here. And the reason why I've said property tax cut about six times, so you can all, it's not just about filling out a bingo card. It's about laying that groundwork to see, to just explain to that equalization really does go back to the taxpayers. So with that, members, state aid equalizing factor and our local operating revenue really has not kept pace with rising property values. I am determined to try to get something fixed with this time. My time is way too precious than to take up bills and park them, so I try not to do that, but also to think of the bigger picture. And as it's been pointed out before, our Hopkins School District as a whole, I get very sensitive about this because Hopkins proper, our city, is 2 by 2 miles, as a reminder, 65% rental, 40% BIPOC, and very much lower referendum market value than the rest of our school district that I love so dearly and have a husband that teaches in it, and I work in it part-time, too. So love the Hopkins School District as much as St. Louis Park and Indiana as well. But it is an important bill to look at statewide. We really should be trying to remember that it shouldn't determine what zip code a child lives in, how well they're educated. So House File 1271 is just one way that we can address this. And like I said before, we're sending this over to the Tax Committee in order for them to take a look at it as well. And then the arm wrestling will begin about who ends up paying for it. So with that, members, I would ask for your support.
And with that, Chair Joachim renews her motion for House 1271 to be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so the motion prevails for House File 1271 to be referred to the Committee on Taxes. And then I'll now hand the cavil back to Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Vice Chair Clardy, and thank you, members, for the discussion. And we'll move to our final bill on the agenda today, which is House File, get to the right spot, 1457. Representative Purcell, would you like to move your bill before your committee?
So moved.
With that, we have Bill House File 1457 before the committee with the intention of this bill being laid over for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Representative Purcell, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1457 expands the long-term facilities maintenance, LTFM, revenue for cooperative facilities and includes the availability for school districts to levy up to $65 per pupil for the deferred maintenance needs in their intermediate school district buildings. I should say this also includes entities organized as joint powers districts as well. So this bill conforms statute for school districts that use other forms of educational cooperatives, which are predominantly found in Greater Minnesota, where a variety of these organizational structures exist and form cooperative entities, including special education cooperatives, joint powers boards, service cooperatives, and education districts. Like many intermediate programs, educational cooperatives are often used to serve some of our highest need students, like those in Setting 4 programs, and some are used for career and technical education programs as well. This bill also clarifies that school districts can use their lease levy for a cooperative facility they once owned and allows a school district to use their LTFM revenue to enhance a lease facility from either a public or a private owner. Madam Chair, I would like to introduce, we have two testifiers to speak in support of House File 1457.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. First up, we have Randy Erdman, and go ahead and remote. So go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Randy Erdman, Director of Finance for Southwest West Central Service Co-op. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for your time and attention as you consider this request for your support of House File 1457. My name is Randy Erdman. I am the Director of Finance for Southwest West Central Service Cooperative in Marshall, Minnesota. Authorized by Minnesota statute as a regional service cooperative for our members, we provide a comprehensive range of educational and administrative programs and services to our members. For more than 50 years, we have partnered with our members to bring equity and opportunity to our region. Southwest West Central Service Co-op members consist of public schools, non-public schools, charter schools, cities, counties, and other governmental agencies. SWWC serves more than 50 school districts over an 18-county region in Southwest and West Central Minnesota. Our combined student population is approximately 45,000 students in pre-K to 12th grade from districts as small as 80 to as large as 3,500 students. SWWC serves the students from our member districts with the greatest needs who are most at risk and in need of highly specialized and individualized programming. Excuse me. I am honored to speak today for SWWC, our board of directors, our member districts, our staff, and our students. It is our request that this committee champion House File 1457 and see it through to passage so that all districts in Greater Minnesota are afforded the same funding consideration that the metro intermediate districts have. For SWWC, House File 1457 provides our member districts additional financial resources they need to accomplish facility goals regionally and locally. In September of 2016, SWWC began the process for developing a baseline real estate and facility plan to address the regional facility needs for the programs we're running. Through this process, SWWC identified an enormous need for safe and secure facilities for our Setting 4 special education programs. Some of the changes we have seen in student populations include an increase in referrals for younger students, students with more extreme mental health needs, an increase in physical aggression among students of all ages, most troubling amongst elementary students, and lack of space for on-site mental health support and collaboration. As of today, SWWC member districts have two ways to pay for these facilities. One, they can use a portion of their $212 per pupil lease levy funding, or two, they can use their general fund monies. Both options create pressure on our member districts' local budget, as many times they have projects and or programming they would like to use these funds for. Having an additional $65 per pupil of dedicated funding for cooperative facilities will make available the best educational setting possible for our highest needs and most at-risk students. Without this additional revenue or additional resource, our members will have to make a choice, forcing SWWC and other cooperatives to continue to use buildings that are not appropriate or do nothing for the students with their highest needs. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Erdman. Next up, we have Deb Marcotte, Executive Director of Hiawatha Valley Education District. Remote, please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Deb Marcotte. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for your time and attention as you consider this request for your support of House File 1457. I'm honored to speak today for HVED, our board of directors, our member districts, our staff, and our students. It is our request that this committee champion House File 1457 and see it through to passage so that all districts in Greater Minnesota are provided the same $65 funding consideration as the metro area intermediate districts. For HVED, House File 1457 affords the financial support our member districts require to move forward collaboratively in facilities that best support our students' needs. HVED is made up of 13 member districts in the very southeast corner of Minnesota. Our combined student population is approximately 12,000 students in pre-K through 12th grade from districts as small as 300 to as large as 1,300 students. HVED serves the students from our member districts with the greatest needs who are most at risk and in need of highly specialized and individualized programming. To fully explain the enormity of this request, I will share that besides building staff and improving programming for our students, HVED has put extensive time and effort into facilities over the last 10 years. We have been creative and resourceful. We have been continuously involved in some form of facility study, purchase, sale, lease, relocation, or renovation over the last 10 years. Within the last few weeks, HVED has located a property that meets our needs for a centrally located, consolidated campus of services that would complete our decade-long search for the appropriate property. House File 1457 is the legislation that could secure this property for our students. You see, not only has our education district been faced with the same staff scarcity that other education entities have been enduring, but our facilities are scattered in five separate locations throughout Southeast Minnesota, which has greatly magnified the scarcity and inhibited our ability to secure the staff needed to serve our students. Still, our educational efforts continue. Our programming is often stymied by our facilities, which currently splinter our programs into five separate sites over roughly 70 miles of bluff country, from our most northern to most southern sites. Our facilities decisions are not made by a lack of vision, and certainly not for a lack of need, but for lack of a fair funding mechanism. This bill is collaborative and cooperative. The passing of House File 1457 has the power to make available the best educational setting possible for our highest needs and most at-risk students. This committee has the insight and influence to transform educational opportunities for these students throughout Greater Minnesota. Again, we ask that you champion House File 1457. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deb Marcotte, Director Marcotte. With that, any member questions?
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Purcell, go ahead.
I'm sorry, there is information, I believe, that Mr. Strom put together in the packet for this particular one, and so I'm sorry I didn't mention that before I went to our wonderful testimony.
Well, maybe Mr. Strom could just briefly mention, it's just an example of what LTFM, how the runs look now, but go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Purcell, yes, the printout in the packet is designed to show a couple of things. In that second column there is under the label co-op is the cooperative number. And as the speakers have said today, the provisions that currently exist for the intermediate school districts, which are districts 287, 288, 916, and 917, they currently all qualify for the additional building lease money. The same is not true for all of the other cooperatives listed there. So any other number that's listed there is a co-op for whom that does not qualify for. The Southwest Co-op and the Hiawatha Valley folks just spoke to that. But you can look down the list there. I probably should have put the names on as well, but often run out of columns. In terms of the revenue, the baseline amount of revenue for LTFM is in the fourth to last column. With the revenue per pupil in the third to last column, and then the main impact of this bill would be on the building lease. You can see the current building lease amounts, and if you look in the per pupil column there, the ones that are over $212 per pupil are the ones generally that are a member of an intermediate school district. And the increase there for others would be up to $65. Our understanding from the fiscal note last year is that not many districts would be availing themselves of that full amount. So the fiscal note last time around was in about the $1.5 million per year range on a levy impact.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Thank you for the reminder, Representative Purcell. With that, questions, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and trying to wrap my mind around this one too. So my question is with this expanded $65 lease levy, and by the way, I know with our cooperatives this is an issue, so it's something that should be addressed, but I'm just curious to expand that. What authority approves this? Is it the local school boards of the district? Is it the cooperative that says we're going to raise this or use this? Or is it the voters? Who's in charge of releasing this
I think you've we've phoned a friend. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Sam Walseth, lobbyist for both the Minnesota Rural Education Association and the Minnesota Service Cooperatives, who've been actively pursuing this legislation for a number of years. The authority to levy rests with the independent school districts themselves. And so the testimony from the cooperative folks you've heard today, they don't have the ability to levy this themselves. They will, if this legislation goes through, they will in turn then be working with their local independent school district members of the cooperative to see if they would allow them to utilize that money. So the authority still rests with the local school boards.
Representative Bennett, does that answer your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, but clarification if I could.
Follow-up question, go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you for that. So is there a way, so this is something, it doesn't go out to the voters, the school board decides or not, which they're elected officials, so I get that. But is there something in here that requires voters to be notified that, you know, hey, we're adding this on? Do school boards need to do that? Is it just in the minutes and people have to dig for it? Or how does that work?
I'm not sure if Mr. Walseth or okay. We should go to Mr. Strom about the underlying language that currently exists in law.
Madam Chair, I might have to phone a friend a little bit. This gets into the weeds of the school district process. My understanding is this would, if the legislation passed, there would be a new line on the levy sheets for the school board. They would see that in August. And then there is public process where the school boards adopt a levy. But I might defer to Mr. Strom if he has some additional thoughts on the process for public notice on school levies generally.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, there would be no vote on this by the electors. Instead, the boards of the cooperatives are structured somewhat differently, but generally the member districts, like for the Hiawatha Valley Education District, the member districts put representatives on that board to make the decisions. So when the Hiawatha Valley group meets, its board has a meeting and it would make the decision, and its representation on its board are the member school districts. And if the Hiawatha Valley, for example, were to make the decision to go ahead with a building project that would result in higher building lease, then that amount as part of their membership agreement essentially gets specified and is certified back to the local school districts. And the local school board then could choose to underlevy in that category, but the amount that they're required to provide by their agreement with the cooperative, in this case, the Hiawatha Valley, would not change. So if Hiawatha Valley said that your contribution and their board agreed that their contribution was $60 per pupil, Hiawatha Valley doesn't care where that comes from out of the district budget, but the districts, if the district chose not to levy that $60 per pupil, they'd have to take that money out of their other funds according to their agreement with the cooperative unit.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Bennett, follow-up?
Thank you, and that's interesting and confusing at the same time, but so really the authority is with the service cooperatives to say we're going to levy this. I mean, is that kind of how I'm understanding it? Or no, I'm not getting
Mr.
that.
Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, the authority to do the levy or not rests with the member school district. So the individual school board chooses whether to certify the full amount of its levy authority or not. The decision that a cooperative unit, including an education district or a service cooperative or an intermediate school district, makes, that decision is made by its board, which is composed of its member districts. And sometimes when there's disagreement within the board's school districts may leave their cooperative. They may leave the service cooperative for their education program and go elsewhere, or leave one education district and join another. But if they're a member of that, their membership on that board is what essentially decides whether or not that revenue charge is going to be return to the member district. And that's the same way it works for certain other unfunded costs that the cooperative units face, that it's the membership agreement that determines the individual member's contribution to that. There are some, and I'm so sorry to get a little far afield, but in nearly all cases, these facilities are for special ed students, for the level 4 special ed students. And so there's some funding that's provided through the special ed formula. There's some funding that's provided through the tuition billbacks, but there's also member charges to the member districts for those organizations. And that's really where this a line item would appear. The particular co-op would establish what their lease costs would be, enter in an agreement to, for that space. They'd tell the member districts, you've got to pay this. We don't care where you pay it from. Okay. And then the school district can choose to use the levy authority to compensate that or take it from its other general fund money.
Representative Bennett, one more
thank
follow-up.
You, Madam Chair. Thank you. And I think I'm getting that now. So the school district decides the payment must be made if they're a member. And I understand, I've been in contact with SMEC a lot, and I know these needs, so I'm not arguing, or I'm not trying to argue the need here, just how it's working. Then the school district, that board decides we're going to take this out of general fund, we're going to levy. I guess I would just make a comment that if there is a levy increase, I think that needs to be very transparent to the public in this process, because it's a levy increase. So that's what I would ask, that somehow there be a transparency, some kind of language in here where the public's at least notify that, hey, we're going to do this 65 per pupil for our intermediate school. Just a thought. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. So this is an area crafted bill to make sure that the few co-ops that have been left off the ability to work with their member districts for this would be included. So that would be kind of different language we'd have to look at, because that would affect intermediates, everybody else besides just what the co-ops are already wanting to do that everybody else can do, from my understanding. So we can discuss that offline too if you want. Any other further member questions? Seeing none, Representative Purcell. Final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to kind of reiterate, Representative Bennett, it took me some time to wrap my head around the complex cities here, but I really see this bill as a sort of leveling of the playing fields as far as the way that these different groups get incorporated, and making sure that folks in Greater Minnesota have access to that potential additional funds should their member districts be willing to contribute that. I think that's all that I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. With that, members, I will lay over House File 1457 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. We also have a few minutes if folks would choose to. We have the runs for 1271 that I happen to have in my bill folder, but we didn't get into the packet, so sorry about that. We're going to do a little backwards time here, and we'll just explain the House File 1271 runs. This was the optional way to address the local operating revenue fix. So with that, Mr. Strom, maybe just a brief explanation, and then...
Madam Chair, members, the printout that's being passed around is the operating referendum revenue printout. It shows the baseline estimated for next year for fiscal year 25, or the 24-25 school year, then the next year for which property taxes can be certified, versus House File 1271. Essentially what the bill's doing is, as we talked about earlier, we're calculating that equalizing factor. In the middle columns, you can see the referendum revenue that currently exists for school districts, and as you look up and down that list, you can see how that varies, and as the superintendent from St. Michael Albertville pointed out earlier, the varying tax base per pupils essentially means some school districts have an easier opportunity to have voters approve that than others. And then you can look across and see the baseline referendum levy amount, the tax on a $300,000 property, and then under House File 1271, the reduced levy with the higher equalization level, and the distribution of that on a $300,000 property. So top line, $86 million of tax relief on the property tax front, a similar increase in the state aid. On the tax base dropping, you can see that the average owner of a $300,000 home or business would be paying $33 less in its annual property tax, but you can see those amounts vary a lot by district, depending on the district's relative property wealth. So if you went down to line 11, the Anoka-Hennepin School District, you'd see that their tax to support their referendum currently requires a $424 levy on a $300,000 property. that amount would drop to $350 under this equalization approach.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Just wanted to throw that out there so folks had that in their packets. And members, as you know, we'll be canceling committee for tomorrow and Thursday to keep everybody safe and at home, where they're going to do a lot of shoveling, I'm assuming. But the bills that were scheduled, there'll be a notice going out to the public lister, to us members, and to the members who are presenting bills, to let them know that those bills will be rescheduled at an alternative time. So just kind of stay tuned. And with that, members, we're adjourned.